By and large, the Industrial Revolution passed the shtetl by. The very pleasing vignette is told, or has been told, of the first sight in one of these small Polish Jewish communities of what was then called a horseless carriage. The yeshiva students were dazzled and amazed. They wanted explanations. And so they turned to the one of their number who had ever been to Warsaw, and it was reputed to read from forbidden books. And they asked him to explain this latter-day miracle. Oh, he said, it's simple. You take a rectangular frame, and you put four wheels at the post, the corners of the frame, and you tie these wheels together with a wire. You get it? We get it. And then you take these wires and you bind them in the center of the frame in a box where there is a horizontal wheel which turns. Do you get it? We get it. And above this large horizontal wheel, there are a series of smaller wheels. Do you get it? Yes, we get it. And on top of the smallest of the wheels, there's a peg. And there's a wire that runs from this peg to the cab of the car. Do you get it? We get it. And there the motorman pushes a button, and the wire turns, and the wheels turn, and the wires turn again, and the wheels turn again, and this is what makes the car run through our streets. Ah, they said, now we understand. Now I suspect that despite the great refinement in our technical knowledge, we are as overconfident of understanding life as these yeshiva students were overconfident of understanding magnetos and electricity. Life, someone has said, is a miracle wrapped in a mystery. Life simply is. And though our knowledge explosion has perhaps made the mystery a little less impenetrable, the miracle remains untouched and pristine. Science is a very useful tool with which to improve and moderate the natural environment in which we live. But science lacks the ability to give us control of the terms of life, to make us masters of our destiny. We can learn a great deal about process, about how, but we know next to nothing about purpose, about why. The universe is, life is, and it's impossible for us to get behind that ultimate statement. Sensing this, many who of the philosophers and thinkers of our day have adopted the old doctrines of determinism, the circumstantiality of human life. Life, they say, is a matter of destiny. What happens to us is inevitable. We are enmeshed in a web as the spiders prey, and huff and puff and struggle as we will, we cannot break ourselves free. What we think to be freedom, our ability to make decisions, our ability to change the direction of our lives, is more illusion and apparent than real. And these men have gone back to some of the most elementary and basic and primitive doctrines of the human race. For all ancient religion is based on the control by the gods of human life. God opens the womb. God touches the child with his talents. God commands and the human slave must obey. And in the end, God snips the thread when our time has come. In the Eastern religions, there was the doctrine of karma, of an iron law of destiny, and the only escape from this predestination, if you will, was release into nothingness. And the Greeks had their moira, their fate. Man was pursued by that fate, and try as he willed, he could not escape it. And the hero was the man who struggled against life in the full knowledge that the tides of fortune would ultimately wear him down and overwhelm him. And coupled with this sense of being controlled from without, the ancient world and much of the modern world is troubled by evil portents, by the sense that the world out there, these controls, this great power is ominous and dangerous. There's a dark sense in most of the world's literature. The myth of mankind is written in shadows. There are dark riders and awesome spirits and avenging angels and demonic presences which lie in wait for man, which put obstacles in the path of man, which try to beguile man and to possess his soul. Men think of themselves or thought of themselves as flotsam, as bits of oceanic debris tossed hither and yon on the surface of the roiling, surging seas. There was motion, of course, but man did not control the motion. Man was in the control of the intersex of the stars, of the whims of the gods, of the wiles of the devil, of the iron laws of economics, in some control, any control but his own. Interestingly, the image of man as a bit of a log being cast about by the ocean waves is not taken from the Stoic philosophies of the second century or the Hindu philosophies of the very early centuries, but from our own century, from the existentialist literature of our day. For though we no longer speak of man being bedeviled, of men being possessed, we do speak, do we not, of the suppressed violence. We speak of human nature almost as if it were an evil thing within, a volcanic explosion which we can control for a time, which ultimately pulls us down and destroys us and rips away the mask of civilization and decency which we carry. According to these doctrines, old and young, ancient and contemporary, man is now what he has always been, and society is now what it will always be. There is the inevitable cycle of hope, despair, of man reaching for peace and falling short and destroying his civilizations in blood and war. Now, if there is this iron destiny which binds us close, if in fact there are powers out there which prevent our achieving anything for which we hope, if there is in here deep fires burning, hidden reserves of evil which we cannot control, then all that we are doing here this evening, all that Yom Kippur stands for, is a travesty. For Yom Kippur speaks of teshuvah, of repentance, of the possibility of making a new start. All these other philosophies say that which is crooked cannot be made straight. Yom Kippur says the crooked soul can be straightened out. A tear of remorse, the will to review your life, the determination to set your life on another plane, to bring yourself up from the level of coarseness and ordinariness, of vulgarity, of commonality, to a level of sensitivity and awareness and love, the tear, the will, the determination, the deed, do indeed allow you to step up in life. And tomorrow we will read in our Torah the great command, choose life, that you may live. A meaningless command. A meaningless command if it means simply to choose to breathe, to choose to exist. But it says very clearly, we are given the opportunity to choose between animality and humanity, between bestiality and a high level of divinity, between living that is no life at all, and living such as befits the child of God. Yom Kippur is a statement of the possibility of renewal, of setting ourselves other sights, higher sights, of setting out on a new course? What gave our ancestors the hope of renewal? What led them to speak of teshuvah, the possibility of rehabilitation, setting out again? Did they deny the powers out there, that great surging majesty which is the universe? Did they deny that man was in fact in many ways controlled, determined, conditioned by circumstances over which he had no power? Not at all. We were one with the ancient religions in assuming that other powers had created life, other powers determine when we are born, with the bundle of talents which shall be ours, the conditions of our life, the length of our days. Over these we have no control. But Judaism was not afraid to look this awesome power straight on, unblinking. And where most people turned aside and shut their eyes in fear, Judaism looked straight on. And it saw not naked power, raw authority, autocrator, tyrant gods. It saw the God who was both Malkeinu and Avinu, both the sovereign and the father. Both awesome and majestic and sensitive and full of solicitude. Judaism knew the storm. The storm raged and buffeted man, and it is brutal and cold and chilling. The storm also brings the needed rain, which refreshes the earth and cleans the air. And Judaism looked at death, and death is cruel and grief is bitter. But if there is no death, there is no life. If there is no death, there is no place, no opportunity for another generation. Judaism knew pain, the bitter, searing pain. Knew that there is pain that is hardly bearable, but it also knew that pain sharpens our awareness of pleasure, and that were it not for pain breaking down the walls of selfishness, many of us would never learn to what it means to be sympathetic, to share what is implied in the word fellow feeling. Judaism knew full well that this is not the best of all conceivable worlds. But were it such a world, what place would there be for that exhilaration which comes from high moral challenge? How would we live? With what zest? Where would we find the joy and the appeal of life? Now, our fathers made no claim to have described the entirety of God's plan or even a major part of it. God's ways are not our ways, they said, and God's thoughts are not our thoughts. But they had seen enough and experienced enough and known enough to be aware that God not only is power, authority, the storm, but that God is the Father, He who is concerned, the shepherd whose care protects us all. The world was not a frightening world, and the power beyond was not such a power as peoples this world with devils or dark riders or gruesome spirits of the night. There is no mythology in Judaism, for our doctrine of God erases these people, these evil spirits, these conjuries of human imagination from the world. Does Judaism deny that there is chance, luck? Are we not, all of us, in one way or another, creatures of circumstance? Of course we are. There is a merit gap in life between what we are and what we might be. Industry, hard work, determination is no assurance of success. Judaism turns to the man of wealth and says very simply, boast not yourself of an overflowing pocket. You have worked hard, perhaps. You have been agile and nimble and determined. But so was your grandfather, who lived on the edge of poverty in a small town in Eastern Europe. He was no less industrious, and no less vigorous, and no less determined than you. But there was poverty in his environment, and there is great abundance in yours. Judaism turned to the man of power and said to him, boast not thyself of thy position. Do not say it is because I have been daring or mentally agile or vigorous or determined that I am the president of my company, that I sit in the seats of power in my community. What if you had been one of those of your people who lived during the long, anonymous years of bitterness, when your people was outcast and welcome nowhere? You are a creature of circumstance. Boast not yourself of unusual power or skill or merit. We would not even be here, many of us, were it not for the unique circumstances of our day. How many of us are here because of the miracles of medical discovery of this generation? How many of us are still alive today because we lived at a time when childhood was no longer a mortal danger? And how many of us live today simply because a grandparent packed his bags and moved us beyond the range of Hitler's anger? The besetting sin of this generation is pride. We look about, and by the standards of the past, we are successful men and successful women. There is affluence, and there is security, and there is prestige, and there is respectability, and we are rather smug about it all. But how much of it is due to us? How much of it is due to luck? Is it merit or mazel? And we judge others with some of that smug, that very same smug assumption with which we judge ourselves. How many have been honored in this community and in every community, not because of their personal worth, but because of their corporate worth? Not because of who they are inside, the kind of dignity, the kind of humanity that they bear, the wisdom which they have shown, but simply because they were in the right business at the right time and they made a great deal of money. Judaism neither denies the powers beyond nor the spinning wheel of fortune, which spins on and on and which determines for each of us so much of what will happen to us. Where then lies our freedom? Of what does Yom Kippur speak? Not of luck, certainly, and not of those things which we cannot control, but of what? Of the world of the spirit, of your private world, of the inner man, of the place where you determine the standards by which you shall live, the truths that you shall speak, the vision which will guide you on your way, the relationships which will be sacred, the standards by which you will manage your home and your life and your destiny. And this world is your world, and none can step or intrude here. And here you make the classic, irreversible, basic decisions, the decisions which will determine the course of your life. If you are eager for learning, you will never be lonely. If you are willing to love, to share, you will never be an outcast. If you are willing to care, you will never be without a purpose, cause. If you are willing to reach up, nothing that another man does can pull you down. Now, there are some whose private life is an empty place. Some who live by laws, by pressures, by ambitions, by desires not of their own design. There are some who are pished hither and yon by their genes and by their emotion and by their neighbors and by their generation. They are common people, ordinary people, bemused, some of them besotten. They're tragic figures, are they not? And they are not men. For we are only as free as we allow ourselves to be free, as we make ourselves free. And what makes us free? Judgment and will. Learning and love. determination. We can be free only if we are resolved to develop, to cleanse, and to improve, and to grow within. Two worlds compete for the soul of man. The world out there, with all its allurements and all its opportunities, and the world in here. And we cannot control what happens to us out there. You can make a resolution on this Yom Kippur that you will work with new determination, that you will be vigorous in your employment, that you will focus every skill you possess on achieving a certain end, and there are no guarantees that you will achieve it. Someone may pass you over, another may be offered the opportunity. You may lack the skills to perform your function. Beyond us, outside, there is chance, unpredictability, circumstance. But within, who can destroy mine integrity? Who can say, thou shalt not love? Who can tell me I cannot speak the truth? Who can deny me the opportunity to rejoice in beauty, to respond to music, to grow through the knowledge that other men have grabbed and grasped in this universe of ours? I am free if I am free within. And it is to my private world, to my soul, that Yom Kippur speaks. It asks me, as it asks each of us, to look carefully at this private world. Not what others say about me, not the job description which I daily fulfill, not the externals of my life, not all its appurtenances, the home, the wealth, the family, but to look at my private world. Am I satisfied with my standards? Am I happy in my relationships? Have I dared to offer myself wholly to another? Have I been courageous enough facing the sorrows and the griefs of life? Have I been willing to change my mind, to grow? Have I been steadfast in my basic convictions? And each of us, as he makes this judgment, sheds a tear of remorse for the man we might have been, a tear of regret for the woman we might have been. For none of us has wholly lived up to our own expectations, much less God's expectations of us. None of us can say, in wealth or in poverty, in success or in failure, I have wholly walked the way that I set for myself. I have been true, wholly true to myself. And so for each of us, this is an hour of teshuvah, of turning back to that basic idea we set so long ago as the goal of our life, to turn back into the private world and to seek our true self and to find the disciplines which will allow the true I to emerge. And there's a strange, strange truth to all this, that though we are free only, surely, within ourselves, that freedom allows us to bring freedom and hope into our world. For we're like the stone dropped into a pond. A single deed, its ripples reach the furthermost ends of the marsh. And so it is in life. The single deed performed in love reaches down the centuries. Spend an hour with a child who is convulsed with fear and fright. Reduce the poison of his anger. Be patient. Teach him by your very presence that he need not fear those people thronging out there. And somehow, in some way, then every person that child touches in life will have been touched by you. Make your home a place of wholesomeness, a place of encouragement and love. And all those who walk from its doors each morning, who bring laughter and lightness and happiness into the world, who do not burden the world with the sorrows which they were burdened with at home. Each whom they touch will be touched by you. And ultimately, the private world, the discipline of self, the decency which is yours reaches out and touches the furthest limits of mankind. And in that long-range effect lies our hope that someday, in some way, man will break the iron ring of war and hate, of bitterness and strife, that there will be enough legacy of decency in our world, enough of inheritance of good deeds, of men who lived before us, whose lives touch ours, as our lives in turn will touch others, that we will break asunder this ring which binds us, these chains which hold us fast. And there will be enough of decency in our world, enough of goodness and kindness and care, for the statesmen and the diplomats finally to organize the peace, the justice, the freedom, which is our prayer. Yom Kippur climaxes with a great prayer. It's called the Nisana Tokef. Let us declare the majesty of this day. The prayer is written almost entirely in terms of the decree, the powers without, the circumstance and the destiny we cannot control. Mi yaverun, mi yibareun, who shall pass on and who shall be healed? Who shall live in security and whose lives will suddenly be on quicksand? Who shall have success and who shall be smashed low? Who shall be fortunate and who shall be unfortunate? The paragraph climaxes with a very lesson I have sought to leave with you. With teshuvah, with tefillah, with tzedakah, ma'avirin ha'roa ha'gzera. Prayer, repentance, thoughtfulness, the discipline of social concern, all those things which are the private ranges of life, these can mollify and mitigate the stern decree. Yes, we are destined. Yes, there is chance. And yes, there is another chance. Teshuvah, the opportunity which is ours today. Amen.